Hello, and welcome to the Recommendation Roundtable on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be recommending entertainment options that you might find interesting. The way these episodes work is listeners send in clips with recommendations on how you might want to spend your spare time. Various forms of entertainment will be spotlighted, such as video games, books, movies, television shows, and anything else people can think of that we might find enjoyable. So with that, let's get going and see what we've got this time around. I'm going to kick off the first of these recommendation roundtables with a rather shameless self-serving plug, and my first recommendation is going to be the Comic Book Page podcast. Now, obviously, I've been doing it a while, so I'm a little biased here, but we've got, for the Comic Book Page podcast, as I record this, there's well over 1,700 episodes on the Comic Book Page podcast with nearly 1,900 hours of content, covering everything from new comic book releases and reviews on those on a weekly basis, covering over 12 years, movie reviews, television reviews, talk about how comics and trades have been selling, roundtable discussions on various topics of interest and whatnot, book reviews. I mean, there's tons of stuff. So if you're looking for something to do, you're looking for a recommendation on past comics or something like that to read, there is a wealth of material on the Comic Book Page podcast feed there to be had. The entire archives are available. If you want to kind of scroll through and see everything that's available, if you go to the website under the podcast section of the menu, you can either go to show notes, which is searchable, or the episode archive, which is just a straight listing of all 1,700 plus episodes of the Comic Book Page podcast. And let me know what you like. Let me know what you enjoy. Let me know what you want more of. That helps steer the direction of where this goes in the future. So with that, like I said, the first recommendation on the Recommendation Roundtable is going to be for the Comic Book Page podcast, which you're already listening to.
Hey, John, this is Nick Fenner answering your call for some recommendations for the roundtable discussions that you've got coming up. And I wanted to highlight one of the comic series that's available through the DC Universe subscription service. And these are, of course, all digital comics, plus all of the various television shows and old movies and things that come along with that. The terms of service are $7.99 per month charge, billed at the start of every month. Currently, they're doing a 7-day free trial for anyone who wants to try that. And also, if you do like it and want to jump into an annual subscription, they offer that at $75, billed every year. And that's a 20% discount for going with that over the monthly rate. Either way, it's still a pretty good bang for your buck for what you're getting if you don't mind reading some digital comics like the one that I'm going to recommend here today. And that is the run of Secret Origins, which began in 1986 and lasted until 1990. That was actually the second series with that title from DC Comics. The original one was all reprints of character origins, but this series really sought to give you kind of the secret, never-learned origin of some of your favorite characters, you know, from the most well-known to some of the obscure. And the purpose for this, I think, was kind of a post-Crisis on Infinite Earths attempt to sort of catch everybody up to where the characters had come from in that continuity. And a lot of the early ones were written and edited by Roy Thomas, but later Mark Waid jumped on as an editor. There were a couple of specials through the years. And currently on the DC Universe app, most of those issues are on there. Spot checking it this evening, it looked like there were a couple maybe that hadn't quite been filled in yet. But I mean, there's everything from the Floronic Man and the Guardians of the Universe in one issue, tying into the Millennium storyline. We've got Phantom Stranger, the Doom Patrol, Batman, Green Lantern, Sandman, the Flash, all kind of heroes. Anybody you can imagine, pretty much, that was important to DC Comics, especially during the 80s, has been highlighted in one of these. And the nice thing about the series was they had it kind of redrawn and retold by artists and writers at the time. So you get to see some of those creative teams who were contemporary at the time and what they thought of those heroes and kind of how you would go back to basics and tell those. And each issue typically covers two separate characters. They were 48 pages, so kind of like a double story in there. So again, even if nothing else, I think you would definitely get your $8 worth out of just reading through that series this month while you're looking for something to do.
My next recommendation is for a series of novels I've enjoyed over the years. I originally got into these back in the, late 80s. It might have even been the mid 80s. It's the Time Wars series of novels by Simon Hawke. Now, listeners of the Comic Book Page podcast for the last few years are probably already familiar with these because my sister and I have done a series of episodes spotlighting each of these 12 novels and reviewing them and what we thought of them. I'm a big time travel fan of just, I love the concept, and this was one of the titles that I, or series that I thought did a really good job with it and was just a lot of fun. It mixes various literature things like The Three Musketeers, The Man in the Iron Mask, and things like that, treats them kind of as if they were real, and dives in with the concept of wars in the future are fought in the past. We get into a disagreement, I send five people back, you send five people back to, say, the Civil War or wherever, and whoever has the most survivors wins, saves the wear and tear in the modern day. And invariably, with something like that, something could go wrong, and people need to fix the mistakes that happen in the timeline, and the Time Wars series talks about all of that and deals with that. So if you go into the Comic Book Page archives and you look for the Time Wars spotlights, you'll see 12 episodes covering the 12 books. They are available on Amazon, both in Kindle format and in paperback format. I think they're a lot of fun. Definitely worth checking out. Once again, that's the Time Wars series by Simon Hawke.
Hi, all. This is Sam. Thanks for doing these episodes, John. This is fun. I'm looking forward to hearing all the recommendations from the rest of y'all, and maybe we'll find some good things for all of us to do here in this time. My recommendation is The Count of Monte Cristo. Yes, the classic by Alexandre Dumas the Elder, originally completed in 1844. In many ways, I think this is quite possibly the finest novel ever written. As far as acquiring it, it is in the public domain. There are many places to legally acquire it for free online in PDF or ebook formats. If you happen to be a Kindle or Nook person, there also are better versions for 99 cents that can be found easily both through the Nook store or the Kindle store for ebooks. As far as getting physical copies of the books, a couple of my favorites, Penguin's Classic Edition is available, for $10 in paperback right now on Amazon. I think you can get it on Barnes & Noble for $14. If you're a Barnes & Noble fan, there's also the Barnes & Noble Classics does their own set of kind of classics, the Barnes & Noble Classic series, and that's available for $4 for the Nook, $8 hardcover, and $10.95 paperback. So the book and every public library, if they're open in your area, should have them. Things like Hoopla, digital libraries have it. It should be relatively easy to find, and you should be able to find it for free if you'd like. That being said, if you do borrow it from a library, it is a fairly lengthy book, around 1,100 pages on average. Font size and some other things change that depending on which exact version you get. So if you do get it from a library, you're probably going to have to take some time and actually read it. It's not one of those you can wait 2.5 weeks and then, I'd do next, in a couple of days and you think you're going to read it that day, because it is a fairly lengthy book. It is the story of a young merchant sailor in France during Napoleon's exile to the Hundred Days, the return of the Bonapartists, and on for the next number of years after that. The main character, of course, Edmond Dantès, I think just historically one of the great characters in all of literature. It's a story of revenge. It's a story of murder. It's a story of blackmail, adventure. There's all kinds of great things. Basic overview, Edmond Dantès is a young sailor who's about to be promoted to captain of the ship, the Pharaoh, when the captain of that ship dies. There's a jealous purser, Danglars, who thinks he's too young and doesn't deserve it and thinks he deserves it. He is betrothed to Mercedes, and there's, of course, a rival for her affection as well in Ferdinand Mondego. And kind of the last of the triumvirate of the group that conspires against him is Villefort, the actual prosecutor of the French crown. As I said, he's wrongfully accused. He goes to prison. He meets a older Italian gentleman there in prison. He teaches Dantès a lot, tells him how to find a fortune. Dantès eventually escapes, finds that fortune, and then returns to France, masquerading as a wealthy Italian count, the Count of Monte Cristo, and then begins his plot for revenge and all the terrible things that happen both to the innocent and the guilty in some cases. It's a wonderful adventure. It's a great book. Like I said, personally, I think my favorite novel of all time. And so, yeah, that's why I'm recommending that. And I think everyone, if you've got the opportunity, should read it. Again, thanks to John for doing these episodes. And I look forward to hearing the other recommendations.
My next recommendation is going to be The Lost Fleet Novels by Jack Campbell. Now, I originally came across this property in comic book form because there was a 5-issue miniseries that Titan did, and it looked kind of interesting, kind of Star Trek-ish, and I figured, yeah, why not? And I liked it, and I figured, you know, I ought to go check out the series of novels. So I did, I liked it, and I was able to talk my sister into reading them as well, and we've done a series of Lost Fleet Spotlight episodes, one per novel. We've already released, as of the time of this recording, the first 15 episodes with another 3 that we've recorded, and I just haven't gotten around to releasing yet. And these, basically, what happens in The Lost Fleet, in the first book, a long-lost war hero is found floating in space in kind of a cryonic sleep. He's woken up, only to find that the battle he was marooned out in space in happened 100 years prior and was the start of a century-long war between two intergalactic kind of federations, an alliance and another group of humans. And the fighting had just was tearing everything apart, and he was this great war hero, only he wasn't, or at least he didn't feel he was. He was built up to be almost a propaganda figure and now had to live up to that and reteach the ways of battle and how to run a Starfleet and such, or a fleet of starships, I should say, because it's not really Star Trek-ish, although it's got a lot of ships. He's got to reteach them all the things that have been lost and fallen away over the century of war as the experienced people died off and didn't have time to teach the other people how to do things. The first set of novels is 6 novels and has a good beginning, middle, and end to each novel, and a good middle and end to the arc of novels. There's then the Beyond the Fleet series of 5 novels, which kind of continues a little bit after that and follows the same storyline. All of this is told from the perspective of Captain Blackjack Gary, Blackjack being a nickname of the legendary war hero. And we see it all from his perspective, which is a lot of fun. Now, interspersed with that second set of 5 novels is another set of 4 novels that tells things from the other perspective of the syndicate worlds, the group of planets and star systems that the Alliance is fighting against. And we get to better understand their perspective, their way of life and their culture and such, which I found a lot of fun. And then the final 3 novels that have been released as the time I record this are the Genesis Fleet novels, and they take place probably 100 years before Blackjack was lost in battle and in cryonic sleep for 100 years. And it tells the origin of what would become the Alliance worlds and hints at what would become the syndicated worlds. So it's a fairly well-realized space battle kind of storyline that I find a lot of fun. My sister has enjoyed. It's got some things that make it a little familiar if you've seen Battlestar Galactica or Star Trek or something like that, but it's different and it's its own thing. It is not the least bit derivative of those. So if you're not really into either of those, but you want a good story set in space with battles and stuff like this, I really do recommend these books. So once again, that's the Lost Fleet series of novels by Jack Campbell. They're available, among other places, on Amazon and Kindle. You can also find them at bookstores, imprint, if that's your thing.
Hey, John, this is Nick Fenner with a recommendation for one of your recommendation roundtables you have coming up. This is a television recommendation, and it's for the TV series This Is Us, which is put out by NBC. The show is still technically being put out. We're on the season break right now, so waiting for season 5 to come out sometime in the fall, hopefully. And of course, we've just wrapped up season 4. They've targeted about 6 seasons from the last thing that I had heard, kind of from the runners of the show. So hopefully that, you know, kind of is about where it lands. I hate to see when series start to drag out too long and kind of drift from what their main purpose was. And really what makes this show so unique is that the writers have really targeted in on how to connect the various portions of lives of different family members and people who tie in with the main family members that you follow. And it's just incredible. I know they've got like kind of one of those, you know, serial killer or hard-boiled detective rooms with the newspaper clippings and the string tied everywhere. Basically, they've described that's kind of their writing process of connecting all of these events and timelines, and it really is just incredible to see how they're able to weave things in. And you know, as writing a TV show, that they're probably having to rewrite things on the go and kind of add characters in and remove them as they're available. But basically, if I had to kind of summarize the show, it's a little bit sentimental, and sure, if you watch especially the first season, they really lean heavily on some different emotional beats. And as one of my coworkers liked to talk about it, the sappy music that made his wife cry every episode. But basically, you're following along 3 siblings to their 2 parents, and then ultimately the spouses, the other relatives, the friends, the neighbors, the doctors, all the people who've been kind of involved from the earliest ages of a lot of these characters through to their old age. So as the seasons progress, you get to see little bits of these different points in the timelines. And I won't reveal anything else about the TV show, because really you have to watch it and get hooked into it. And so many of these beats kind of play out. It's got Mandy Moore as one of the main actresses, and probably a lot of other actors and actresses that you've seen through various television appearances since then, as this show has been probably, if not the most, one of the most well-regarded and most-watched television shows week to week on network television the last couple of years. So the actors have been making the circuits on various talk shows and made other appearances in TV shows and movies and commercials and all that kind of stuff. So I would recommend it. The series is free, from what I can tell, on the NBC website, so long as you pay for a cable subscription through, you know, Comcast, Cox, you know, any number of those kind of major cable services. You may have to check if that's something that's available to you. I know on my Comcast DVR, I can just go back through the on-demand and pull up any of the old seasons. The seasons are a little shorter than typical for kind of a long-running show. Each one is about 15 to 20 episodes in length, so it's easy to binge watch. Every episode's about an hour when you throw in all the commercials, so you can probably run through it a little bit faster. And if you have to, I'm sure you can probably find these also through Netflix or some of those kind of services. So you may just kind of do a little exploration, poke around, and see where you can find it. But I definitely recommend it, as it's you know, kind of gimmick is really paid off well with good storytelling and a lot of great acting between the various actors.
Now, this recommendation is one that I've been a fan of for many years, and I know it's available that you can pay for it on Amazon Prime Video. I think it's on Netflix. I'm not sure where else it might be available, but it's a nice hidden gem, and if you've got kids and stuff, they might enjoy this as well. I do think it's truly all ages material, and that's Jackie Chan Adventures. Now, this is a cartoon series that was on Saturday morning. I think it also had some afternoon runs at some point, and this was, I don't know, 20 years ago now. Now, obviously, it's nominally based on Jackie Chan, the martial arts movie star, but it's an animated cartoon, and it's a series of half-hour episodes. The first season ran for 13 episodes, the second ran for 39, and then the following three episodes, I think, ran 13 episodes each. So we're talking 95 hours, with the first 13 being a beginning, middle, and end, because they didn't know if they were going to get more. And it's got Jackie Chan, who's actually, the cartoon version is voiced by a different actor, because Jackie Chan didn't think his English was good enough at the time. Now, whether you believe that or not, I mean, it's what he said. I don't know if I agree with him, I guess is what I'm saying. He did do live-action shorts at the end, answering some questions and giving a little background about himself, but those were like 30 seconds to a minute or two, so they weren't much. But you may be thinking, Jackie Chan, you see him in the movies because physical martial artist, that's what you're looking for. The cartoon has that style of action. It's not the same as seeing him do it live, of course. But in addition to that, we've got his fictional niece, essentially, cousin, Jade, who's getting into trouble and stuff and helping her Uncle Jackie and their mutual uncle. Yeah, they're creative with the names here. And basically, Jackie is an archaeologist, much like he was in many of his Hong Kong movies, and he's helping, I think it's Section 13, uncover dangerous artifacts and keep the world safe. Now, in the first 13 episodes, they're going after the talisman, and these are 12 things based on the Chinese zodiac that can give people particular superpowers. Super speed, invulnerability, invisibility, things like that. And this is a fun Saturday morning kind of cartoon. It's got a higher action level than a typical sort of a, you know, Scooby-Doo or other sort of a thing, because it's based on Jackie Chan, but it's definitely all ages material, and it's just, it's a lot of fun. It's good, wholesome entertainment. After they get the talismans, they've got other artifacts they're going after. The talismans come back. There's recurring villains. It's got pretty much what you would expect out of a Saturday morning cartoon. And like I said, it's a lot of fun. I really enjoy it. I'm a big Jackie Chan fan, which is how I, you know, came across this to begin with. And at the time I was thinking, in a cartoon? Really? That's not going to work. But it did. And even if you take the name Jackie Chan and that stuff out of it, the material holds up on its own. And they've got a lot of kind of Easter eggs, episode titles named after his movies or alluding to, you know, things he'd done in the various films and whatnot. But even all of that aside, it's fun cartoons. Like I said, I know it's available on Amazon Prime. It's a pay-for sort of a thing there. You don't get it with your Prime membership. At least, I don't think you do. I think it's available on Netflix. I know the first two seasons were released on DVD. The first one in parts and the second one all at once, which is kind of ironic because the first season lasted 13 episodes and it took three DVDs to get it out. Yet they got all 39 out in one package for the complete second season. I don't know of releases of the third, fourth, or fifth seasons on DVD. If anyone does, please let me know. Anyways, I think the Jackie Chan Adventures is a lot of fun, well worth checking out if you've got kids or just want some light, fun action adventure entertainment.
Dr. Mo here with a pick for the recommendation roundtable. It's Robin, the 1991 five-issue miniseries released by DC Comics. Now, you're probably wondering what Robin is for the focus of this miniseries. Well, that will be Tim Drake. 1990-1991 was a pivotal point in the Batman corner of the DC Universe. You really had the rise of a new Robin in Tim Drake. Tim Drake was proving his chops over in Batman and Detective Comics prior to this 5-issue miniseries that was written by Chuck Dixon, drawn by the late Tom Lyle, inked by Bob Smith, colors are by Adrian Roy. Again, as I mentioned, this series was set up in Batman and Detective, and during that period, he was developing the skills that he would need to become Robin, but he wasn't allowed to wear a Robin costume until this miniseries. It's one in which we got the redesigned Robin costume with the long pants that was prominently featured around this time in the Batman animated TV series. In this 5-issue miniseries, Tim decides that he needs to hone his fighting prowess, his martial arts ability, so he decides to go to France and study under a martial artist who taught Bruce. Now, given that this is a superhero comic, Tim finds himself entangled in a street gang, gets mixed up with a DEA agent named Clyde Rollins, leads to an encounter with Lady Shiva, and this criminal mastermind known as King Snake. So the series, which initially starts in France, becomes like a globe-trotting adventure. And throughout it, Tom Lau provides some really a classic-looking take on Tim Drake. And it's really more or less the style that we will become accustomed to when you see this character visually throughout the 90s. The covers for each of the five issues of this miniseries is done by Brian Bolan. They are exquisite looking miniseries. They're so beautiful, so rich looking, that they're still used for the trade dress today. Now, if you are familiar with the Tim Drake Robin, particularly throughout the 90s and the 2000s, you will know that Chuck Dixon's name is synonymous with that character. This is when that more or less that pairing, that dynamic duo of Dixon and Tim Drake begins. Dixon writes a Tim Drake who is, he comes across as a teenager who is a bit of a nerd, a bit of a hacker, but he's competent, but he's not overly confident. And you see over the course of this miniseries that Tim, you know, he starts to learn different skills from the various individual he meets or some of them he dubs his teachers. And we see the character's confidence grow over the course of the 5 issues. And it's a nice way to kind of differentiate the Tim Drake Robin from what we've got from Dick or from Jason at this point. And it shows us again and again why we think Tim would be a great match to Bruce, a great foil. I recommend this miniseries for fans of Tim Drake first and foremost. If you are fans of comics that give you a meaty issue, again, this is for you. You really feel like you get a nice chunk of an installment, a beginning, middle, and end. There are no splash pages. There's time for character moments. There's action. Tom Lyle does a really good job with the action sequences. If you're interested in reading this miniseries, it can be found on the DC streaming service, or you can get it via Comixology. Comixology has the 5 issues individually available for $2 a piece. There is also a digital trade that you can get that is called Robin Volume 1 Reborn. Now, that trade not only contains the 5-issue miniseries, but also issues of Batman and Detective Comics that serve as a prequel and kind of get you up to speed on what you need to know about the Tim Drake character prior to the events of this 5-issue miniseries. This trade can also be purchased physically as well. The trade dress for Robin Volume 1 Reborn is the Brian Boland cover for the first issue of this miniseries. There is also an older trade that collects these five issues. I believe it's called Robin, A Hero Reborn. That trade has been out of print for a long time, but it is a nice collection that contains just those five issues. If you're familiar with Tim Drake, I think that this miniseries will help you fall in love with that character again, or reacquaint you with that character. If you've never experienced the Tim Drake version of Robin, you can't go wrong with this miniseries. It's a foundational miniseries, again, that will be a gateway to other Tim Drake stories, especially those written by Chuck Dixon.
My next pick is kind of one of these aggregate picks. It's a movie, the sequel movie, and the spinoff TV series. Now, what prompted me to do this is, one, I love this franchise, but again, what prompted me to do it was, as I record this on April 18th, I don't know when this clip is actually going to go up. I may hold it for a future episode, or maybe it goes up in the first one. I don't know. Anyways, a day or two ago, Brian Dennehy passed away, and he was the co-star of the films. And the films I'm talking about are FX and FX2. Now, Brian Brown was the lead. He played Raleigh Tyler, a special effects artist for the movies. Brian Dennehy played a cop who needed some help, it's been long enough since I've watched the first one. I need to rewatch it. I forget exactly how they first meet, but basically, there's some stuff going on. I think it was basically Raleigh helped fake the death of somebody that Dennehy's character was investigating, and that's how they kind of wound up getting to know each other and work together, because Dennehy's character was a New York cop at the time. And it's a mix of a murder mystery and kind of a Mission Impossible film. They do a sequel with it where the two are now friends, and Dennehy's character ropes the other one into helping him again, and of course, all stuff goes to hell. And then, a while later, I forget how many years later, there was a 2-season show, FX The Series. Now, obviously, they recast everybody, because you're not going to get, you know, movie stars to do TV for the most part. And they got Cameron Dotto to play Raleigh Tyler, and they recast the cop, but he was only there for the first season. And basically, what they did is they turned it into, essentially, a police procedural mixed with Mission Impossible. Because you've got this special effects artist, he can do the Mission Impossible type masks, the, you know, make it look like somebody's where they're not or not where they are sort of things. And it's got a lot of Hollywood stuff mixed in with a police procedural, and it's a lot of fun. Now, also in the first season, we have Carrie Ann Moss, best known for The Matrix. We've also got Christina Cox, who has been in a number of other kind of sci-fi things over the years in both seasons. I found these a lot of fun. I like the movies. It's just a gratuitously special effects laden, either police procedural for the TV shows or kind of, you know, murder mystery action adventure type stuff for the movies. Brian Dennehy and Brian Brown did a great job in the films, and I think the actors they got, particularly Cameron Dotto for the special effects artist, Raleigh Tyler in the TV show, did an outstanding job. It's a lot of fun. I know these are available on DVD. I think they're available on Netflix. I'm not positive on that. I've kind of let my Netflix subscription lapse for a little while. I've got enough other things eating up my time. But these are worth chasing down, and I figured it's something that's enough off the beaten path that most people probably aren't aware of it and haven't seen it. Even if they're aware of the movies, they may not be aware of the TV shows that ran for, I think, 20 or 22 episodes for each of the 2 seasons. So again, FX, FX2, both of those are movies. FX the series, the TV show for the 2 seasons. I think it's worth checking out.
Hey, John, this is Nick with a pick for your recommendations roundtable. This is a website, a comics service called gocomics.com. That's gocomics.com. And I'll read from you the about page here, what it says, and give kind of a little background for what I do with the page. It says, Go Comics from Andrews McMeel Universal is home to many of the most popular comics and cartoons in the world. GoComics.com is the web's largest catalog of syndicated newspaper strips, political cartoons, and webcomics, offering free new content every day. Iconic cartoons include Peanuts, Calvin and Hobbes, Garfield, Ziggy, and Dilbert. Recent successes include Foxtrot, Get Fuzzy, Pearls Before Swine, The Argyle Sweater, The Boondocks, and Cul-de-Sac. There are two membership options, free and premium, both providing email subscription and personalized online access to the Go Comics library, with content from critically acclaimed comic creators, Pulitzer Prize-winning editorial cartoonists, and the hottest up-and-coming talents. Go Comics is guaranteed to have something that will make you smile. So a lot of people have probably heard of a lot of the properties that are covered by Andrews McMeel Universal. If you have a daily newspaper subscription or you pick up the Sundays for the comics, you've seen a lot of these. And, you know, people do know that comic strips are still put out and published. But, you know, kind of with the dwindling numbers of newspaper subscriptions in recent years, maybe more people don't necessarily see them or realize those comics are still put out there. But this service is an excellent way. You can go in there and really click back through past archives of whole comic strips from Calvin and Hobbes. I like the strip Red and Rover, which is kind of a take on that concept. You know, just anything that you've ever seen in a newspaper strip and you thought might be there, check it out. I'm sure it is. Maybe you might find some new ones that you like. The website's easy to navigate through. You can search by different topics or talents and all of that. And the best thing about the service is if you want the premium options, that does give you a little bit more flexibility with how you use the site and subscribe to some things. But it's not really necessary. What it does do, though, is for $1.99 a month or for $20 per year, it says you can become a Go Comics insider. And basically what that adds is the ability for you to kind of make your own like Sunday comics sheet where all of your comics are kind of in one viewable page every day. You don't have all the advertisements. And you can get email subscriptions to a lot of these different strips. And I just want to add, too, like I said, you can go on there and definitely view archives. Well, the kind of neat thing is they do occasionally set up almost like a new daily stream for classic comics. And so even if you don't want to constantly every day go back in there and find old, you know, Calvin and Hobbes strips, they may every couple of years start the rotation over so that it sends out a new comic every day and you can follow along with these classic versions of the strip on a new release schedule. So anyway, check it out. I'm sure there's something you'll like in there as it ranges a whole broad spectrum from political cartoon to funny gag strips, one panel strips and all of that. So that's my recommendation.
My next pick is a series of novels I originally came across at San Diego Comic-Con. The author was sharing a booth with somebody who had done a panel. I enjoyed the panel, went down to talk to the guy, saw the stuff, and said, oh, I'm curious about it. Didn't pick it up then, but eventually picked it up on Kindle, and that's Wearing the Cape. Now, this is by Marion G. Harmon, who has done, I think, 8 books in this series, plus one or two kind of side books. One with a vampire character out of these. Basically, it's a world in which superheroes exist. Chicago seems to be kind of the epicenter of superheroes versus New York or LA or anywhere else. And we focus on Astra. Now, in this world, if you go through a traumatic experience, like having, you know, part of a freeway overpass dropped on your car and you're in danger of, you know, dying, that could be enough to cause you to have a breakthrough and become superhuman. Now, the nature of the incident and the nature of your personality determine do you get more of a fight or a flight or some other kind of a power. In this case, Astra becomes kind of sort of the equivalent of Supergirl in this universe. Flight, super strength, those sorts of things. She gets mentored by Atlas, who is kind of sort of the Superman type of this world. And we see how she goes and basically joins the Sentinels, which is the premier superhero team in Chicago, and the course of her career over the couple of books. Now, I've read all of them. Wearing the Cape, Bite Me, Big Easy Nights, which is kind of a side story featuring Artemis, who's a vampire, almost Batman-ish kind of sort of character. Villains, Inc., Young Sentinels, Small Town Heroes, Ronin Games, Team-Ups and Crossovers, Recursions, Repercussions. They've also had two short stories of Omega Knights and A Christmas Story. I've read all of them. I've enjoyed them. At some point, I may try to talk my sister into reading them as well, and we may do a series of episodes on them. They're a lot of fun. It's all ages material. I think there might be a little profanity here and there. Matter of fact, I know there is, but overall, I think these are a lot of fun, and we get to see Astra progress from discovering her powers, being a rookie hero, to being an experienced hero, to leading a group of characters and having all sorts of fun adventures. So if you're looking for superheroes in novel format, I think Wearing the Cape is a good place to start. So once again, those are available on Amazon, both in paperback and on Kindle. If you're curious about it but not sure, I believe they've got a Wearing the Cape, The Beginning, which is like the first third of the novel for free. At least they did at one point. That was how I sampled the stuff. Again, worth checking out. Once again, that's Wearing the Cape by Marion G. Harmon, and it is available both at bookstores and online, and you can go to wearingthecape.com for more information. Remember, the clips in these episodes of the Recommendation Roundtable are picked by listeners like you. The way these episodes work is you send in clips recommending various forms of entertainment that you think other listeners might find interesting. Whenever I get enough clips to fill an episode, I'll put one together and kick it out. There are no deadlines on these. Just send in clips of, hey, this is a fun way to spend your time, be it a video game, a book, a movie, a television show, a board game, whatever. We're all geeks. We all like similar things. Let's help each other find various forms of entertainment we find interesting. The guidelines for these episodes are simple. One pick per clip. Now, that pick could be a particular movie. It could be a string of movies. It could be a particular novel, a string of novels. It could be whatever. Just a conceptual thing. And I'm not going to get too wrapped around the axle on this. It's just, don't be recommending two things in the same clip. That way I've got the option of inserting something in between from somebody else, just to give the episodes a little variety and such. Now, if the two things are related, then yeah, do them as a bundle if you want to, that's fine too. Again, nothing too crazy. The only real rule is no profanity. This is a all-ages podcast. So with that in mind, if you've got something that you think is great for younger listeners, recommend that and say, hey, if you've got kids or whatever, or if you're a younger listener, you might find this, or if it's all ages, just tell us who your pick is targeted to and why they might enjoy this form of entertainment. And that's really all there is to it. So once again, there are no deadlines. It's an open invitation and open submission all the time. Whenever I get enough clips, I'll do another one of these episodes. So the future of the Recommendation Roundtable is in your hands.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.